Welcome to the Hormones in Harmony podcast. I'm your host, Vivian Allred, former chronic illness sufferer turned trusted health practitioner. My passion is helping people to identify and address the root causes of their symptoms through my online business, Viva Natural Health. If you're struggling with confusing or stubborn symptoms that just won't go away despite your best efforts, then you're in the right place. If I can heal from a long list of symptoms and conditions, including cystic acne, hair loss, severe food reactions, and brain fog, then you can heal too. Stay tuned for weekly episodes that share expert guest interviews, Q&A, and solo episodes that are all intended to help you wherever you're at on your healing journey. The information shared on this podcast is intended for educational purposes only, and is not designed to replace the advice of your health practitioner. That said, let's get into today's episode. Hello everyone, welcome back to the Hormones in Harmony podcast. I have not done one of these episodes in quite a long time, so we're gonna be doing a Q&A today. I chose a few questions from a recent Instagram poll that I did on my stories. If you're not already, definitely follow me on Instagram. I'm at Viva Natural Health. And it seemed like the majority of questions that I chose were digestive related. So this seems like it's a big problem that you guys are having. And I've had my fair share of digestive issues. And the past few years have been such night and day difference from what I used to deal with constipation and bloating and just constant awareness of my gut, which now I was even thinking the other day, I had a big meal, felt a little bit full, and that was the first time in a long time that I actually had any sensations in that area, which is such a big win for me. But you might know you have digestive issues. Maybe you're the one who submitted one of these questions. So obvious digestive symptoms, I just listed a few, are gas, bloating, pain, constipation, diarrhea, issues going to the toilet. But you might be listening and you might think, I don't have any digestive issues because I go to the toilet multiple times a day and I don't really struggle with bloating. But you should still listen. You should still tune in because there are a ton of other symptoms and conditions that are associated with poor gut health, like skin issues, whether it's eczema, psoriasis, acne, hormone problems, whether that's PCOS, endometriosis, fertility issues, fatigue, brain fog, and immune system problems. This might be hay fever, autoimmunity, maybe you're getting sick frequently. So there's so many issues that are stemming back from the gut. And it's like Hippocrates said all of those years ago, the father of modern medicine, all disease begins in the gut. And there's also a funny meme that's, I've got 99 problems or 99 symptoms, but healing my gut solved about 85 of them. And I would pretty much agree with that. It's definitely not the be all and end all, because in order to heal your gut, you also have to have other things worked on and other imbalances addressed. So it's not just a matter of fix my gut, and it's a super easy process. And it can take a long time. It can take several months, sometimes years, like it did in my case, to really heal and work on these underlying infections that I had and just this intestinal permeability / leaky gut that I struggled with for a long time. And it was contributing to the majority of my symptoms. A big one were these food intolerances and food allergies and reactivity, these histamine responses I had. It's very hard to get under control. And I can definitely speak about this more. It's a bit of a separate side subject, but a common question that I get asked is, how do I heal my gut when I have histamine problems? Because the typical recommendations for gut healing, and this is why I'm not a fan of the mainstream advice for everyone, and it's not a blanket statement that there's just this one gut protocol that everyone needs to do, is to take bone broth and fermented foods and have these like leftover meals that you meal prep in advance, or certain types of probiotics can be high in histamine, or take high doses of L-glutamine. But for me and a lot of people with histamine problems or mast cell activation syndrome, that can actually cause a lot more inflammation and can trigger a lot of symptoms. So I see gut healing a little bit different, and I think I've got about 5 questions today that I want to get through, 4 or 5 questions. And yeah, we'll see if you enjoy this. If you want me to do more episodes, I can absolutely do so. But the first question that I have is from someone called Jodie. Thank you, Jodie, for submitting your question. She basically was asking how to achieve good bowel movements. What are we looking for when it comes to good digestion? More information on fiber specifically, because this person is probably wanting to work on constipation or bowel health, and she knows that fiber is important, but she's reacting and she's getting more bloated with fiber-rich foods. So I'll start off with what we're looking for with ideal bowel movements. So we're looking for at least 1 to 3 bowel movements per day. This is optimal. And if you want to Google the Bristol stool chart, I think it's around number 4 or 5. It should point out the optimal. And I describe it as like a brown banana. You want it to sink, not float. You want to pass a good amount, and you want to feel fully evacuated. It should be easy to pass, no offensive smells. You should feel happy and like you have, yeah, fully eliminated and fully cleared everything out after your bowel movements. And during the day with digestion, as I said before, you shouldn't really be experiencing any sensations in the gut area. If you've eaten an excessive amount of food at your birthday dinner or at Christmas, you are going to feel a bit heavier. But I used to eat like a small amount or even drink water, and I would feel bloated and I would physically distend after eating, and that's not normal, just day to day. So yeah, we want to feel full at times, but I 24/7 just used to be aware of what's going on in my gut. And just a side point here as well is, even after I treated, because for me it was gut infections, it was SIBO, it was low stomach acid, a few things that I'm going to be talking about today. But even when I addressed them, I still had this, it's called visceral hypersensitivity. So it's like the nerves get a little bit overreactive. So even when the problem was dealt with, I still had this lingering sensation, and it made me think that I still had gut issues. But at that stage, it was just a matter of time and a matter of gut healing and reducing inflammation that allowed that to go away. So if that's still you, if you feel every little movement, you feel, I used to feel like it was a baby kicking in there. And I used to, yeah, feel things moving along, feel like little pulsing sensations. That does go away over time. Sometimes supporting the nervous system and nerve regeneration. Some medicinal mushrooms can help with that. But that is, yeah, a little additional information. I'll probably go on a few tangents here because I'm very passionate and I've had a lot of experience both personally and professionally with gut issues. So with fiber and this person's question, it can honestly go either way. So it's all coming down to experimentation with your diet and on your own. And some people basically cutting out fiber and cutting out all plants and going sometimes as strict as a carnivore diet, which is zero fiber, zero plants, and a lot of animal protein. Sometimes that resets someone's gut and relieves the chronic constipation. But if this happens, if you reducing your fiber intake improves your constipation, this tells me that you probably have slow motility or dysbiosis slash SIBO. So dysbiosis, if you're not familiar with that term, is an imbalance of good and bad bacteria. SIBO is small intestine bacterial overgrowth. You can also have SIFO with an F, small intestinal fungal overgrowth. And this is a big driver. I think about 70 to 80% of people with an IBS diagnosis actually have SIBO as an underlying cause of that. SIBO isn't a root cause, so even if you did have SIBO, that's not the be all and end all, which I initially thought it was going to be for myself. And then it turns out that that's just another symptom or sign of deeper problems. But working on SIBO can eliminate IBS in a lot of people. And it sounds like this is what's happening with this person who asked the question. That she's eating more, and a lot of people, the common thing that I hear is when I eat healthier, I get more bloated. That tells me that this person, yeah, probably has slow motility, SIBO, bacterial overgrowth, and when they're adding all of this fiber in, because their gut's unhealthy, it's actually having a detrimental impact. And the problem isn't the food, the problem is that person's gut, so that needs to be worked on. And this is because when the gut's not moving food through properly, so this comes back to a motility issue. Between meals, we should have something called peristalsis and this migrating motor complex that is muscle contractions that just pushes the food along and it cleans out the intestines because food shouldn't really be lingering and sitting for a long period of time, especially in the small intestine. That should be the place that we're absorbing nutrients and it should be out of there within a good few hours. But then it does spend longer in the large intestine, the colon, because at that point it's dehydrating. A lot of the fluids have been removed. That is where a lot of the good bacteria should be and should be being fed from the fibers. And when we do produce gas in that area, that's where it's meant to be. But it's when there's a lot of gas being produced in the small intestine, it causes this like trap sensation and it can cause a lot of bloating, distension, and pain. And it can really slow down your motility in a lot of cases and contributing to constipation. And then you've got all of this like toxicity just sat in the colon. Imagine a free-flowing river versus a stagnant pond. Which of those do you think is going to have the most issues with infections and bacteria and yeast overgrowth and parasites? It's going to be the stagnant one. So it's all about movement in this situation. So if you're eating too much fiber for your body in this case, and there's this slow motility, the bacteria may be in the wrong place in the small intestine, they're overgrown. And when they feed on the fiber, they produce gas and that can cause pain because you're not going to have so much gas being produced in that area. So fiber also can be irritating if you have inflammation in the gut, just as a general. So if you have IBS for another reason, from maybe stress or eating foods that you're sensitive to, and you have extra fiber or you have inflammatory bowel conditions, sometimes fiber can be too irritating. Again, it's not the food that's the problem, it's your gut. So working on the underlying causes of IBD, IBS is important. So you can add that fiber back in because it really is important for long-term health. And they have shown now a diversity in the gut flora, the gut bacteria. It should be like a rainforest, and all these different species protect us and help us to have better metabolisms and help with even our brain function and neurotransmitters and our immune system, so many different things. So long term, we do want to be able to tolerate fiber. I do think people overdo it. We don't need bowls and bowls and bowls full of salads at every meal, and the type of fiber also differs. So we're not lumping it under the same category. There's actually different types of fiber, and it depends. Some people do better with less cruciferous vegetables, but more courgettes and zucchini and cooked mushrooms. And I always say if you have digestive issues, try to stay away from raw vegetables as a whole until you're feeling better because they are just harder to digest. Even in the healthiest of guts, if you're eating a salad in the middle of winter, then that is going to take more effort because your body has to kind of cook it in the stomach and heat it up. Whereas when you're eating cooked vegetables like a stir fry instead of a salad, that is just easier to digest. So if you're struggling with any digestive issue or if you're wanting to eat more seasonally, just avoid as many salads and have more cooked vegetables instead. So some people do better with less fiber, but other people do better. And this is the typical advice with more fiber. So even if you went to your doctor and said you were struggling with constipation and digestive issues, usually they say have more fiber, not less, because the average person typically does need to eat more eventually. This person, if they do see improvements with increased fiber, they may have issues with low good bacteria, low beneficial flora. And this increase in fiber is feeding the bacteria, which helps to bulk up the stool. And always start slowly. So you would never just go from hardly eating any to eating like grams and grams at every single meal. Always start slowly. And there is an adjustment period. So if there's a tiny bit of gas and bloating for the first few weeks, or if you're taking a prebiotic or probiotic supplement just for extra support, then just always start slow. But it comes down to experimentation. So it can honestly go either way. So I would say to this person, just maybe try a couple of weeks on a lower fiber diet, depends where you're starting from, and then a higher fiber diet and just see what that does. Try different fibers. There are two main differences that I want to talk about. So soluble fiber, most fruits and vegetables and grains have a little bit of both of these too. But soluble fiber is soluble in water, so it easily dissolves, it breaks down into a gel-like substance in the intestines, and it has extra benefits such as improving your cholesterol levels, metabolic health, it helps you feel fuller for longer, helps with blood sugar regulation, and it feeds your good bacteria, therefore improving your immune system and digestion overall. And if you had a really healthy gut, soluble fiber is key for long-term health because this is feeding your good bacteria, acting like a prebiotic, and therefore you're going to get all of those benefits that I mentioned before. But if you intake too much soluble fiber and you have these overgrowths, you have too many bacteria, this is where it can cause excessive gas and bloating. The other type of fiber is insoluble, so this one doesn't dissolve in water and it stays intact, and this acts more like a sweeping broom through the gut. So it helps to just bulk things up, move things along. And as I said, fruits, vegetables, grains usually contain a mixture of the two, but a common one that's just insoluble fiber is something like bran, wheat bran. It's like an old school supplement that people use. So this person, I'm suspecting that they might have SIBO or bacterial overgrowth in general. And as I said, it's more of a symptom than the problem. So working on it can improve symptoms, but this condition, if you want to look a little bit more into it, it can be very reoccurring. And that's because people just treat the overgrowth and they don't look deeper as to why. I was in the vicious cycle of this for many years. So some of the causes of SIBO can include slow motility. So if the thyroid is low or someone has just a slow metabolism in general, minerals can contribute to that. And a calcium shell is a very common one that just slows down the body overall. So if you clear the infection, but you haven't addressed this metabolic issue, then that's why it can come back. Someone might also have deeper infections. So if you have small intestine bacterial overgrowth, further down in the gut, in the large intestine, you might have parasites or you might have yeast overgrowth. Toxicity, heavy metals and mold can slow down the motility and favor the growth of pathogens. But I would never start here. I don't know what stage of the healing process this person's in. So I'm just trying to give as much information as possible. Stress is a huge contributing factor to SIBO because when we're stressed, our body goes away from rest and digest mode. So we're not going to be breaking down our food if our brain thinks that we're being chased by a saber-toothed tiger. That all gets put on hold. That means the blood moves away from the gut and the stomach. Food is left there to rot and ferment, and that attracts bacteria that produces gas that slows motility, gives us pain, and gives us bowel symptoms. So especially at mealtime, we want to be very mindful when we're eating, but the rest of the day, we want to really take stock on our health, on our stress levels, and make sure that we are balancing things out. It's not that we can never be stressed, but if you're not addressing the lifestyle and the reason that you probably developed these issues in the first place, then that's why they can come back. And then another more structural physical problem is adhesions, scar tissue. So people who've had C-sections or scar tissue built up from endometriosis or conditions like that, they can be more likely to develop SIBO. So treatment, again, we want to ideally check first and not just guess unless you're working with a practitioner who's skilled and has like plenty of experience with this. You can test for SIBO or test what's going on with your gut through a SIBO breath test. This is a glucose or lactulose tolerance test. So you can see whether it's hydrogen or methane being overgrown. That might switch up the treatment a little bit based on which bacteria are likely elevated. But then there are also indicators and extra information markers available on a stool test. The one that I like is a GI map and/or a urine test called an organic acid, an OAT test. So I've done all three of them side by side, and the stool test and the urine test do pretty much overlap with the breath test because that is a bit of a pain to do. It's a 3-hour breath test. You have to kind of do some diet modifications the day before, and it's not 100% accurate. None of them are. So I do these days prefer to use more stool testing and urine testing when possible. So I'm just assuming this person has imbalances. So with her working on motility, I'd say it is key so that you can still have the fiber, maybe a smaller amount to begin with, if you're doing better with that and feel very bloated after more. So working on your motility is just going to help to move things through so that the bacteria and the gas isn't getting trapped, and that's where the bloating is coming from. So the key things that affect motility are minerals, your thyroid, movement, stress management, prokinetic herbs. So these are specific herbs like ginger and triphala that can help to move food through the intestines, and vagus nerve support. So you can look into all of these areas. I've got podcast episodes on all of them, apart from the prokinetic herbs, but I've done episodes on SIBO before. So to search any of these keywords on the podcast app that you're listening right now with Hormones in Harmony, or on YouTube, Viva Natural Health is the channel, and then just put minerals next to it, or thyroid, or stress. I think I've got one on the vagus nerve as well with Dr. Stephanie. So you can look just to save time today. And then there are some specific products and supplements that you might want to look into. If you are wanting to try some fiber and you're not really sure which is going to be best, whether it's a lower fiber or higher fiber option, then psyllium husk or psyllium fiber can be pretty well tolerated by those with sensitive guts because it's a soluble fiber. It creates this gel-like consistency. It's not really fermented well by bacteria, meaning that there's going to be less gas production, and it can even just be like soothing to the gut if there is this inflammation because of that gel consistency. And popular fiber supplements that doctors prescribe, such as Metamucil, have psyllium powder in the formulation. Another one is called Sun Fiber. Again, often well tolerated, even if you have SIBO, because we know that there are benefits of fiber, but it becomes like a problem when something that you need is causing issues. So if that's the case and you still want to support your body with some fiber, but you can't eat a lot of garlic and onions and cruciferous vegetables at the moment, these higher FODMAP foods, then Sun Fiber or psyllium husk could be a good option. But again, start very slowly. And depending on what your stool test or SIBO test come back with, it will probably mean that you need to do some sort of gut protocol at some point. This differs person to person depending on the results, but a lot of people have overgrowths because we've been on antibiotics so much in the past, and that reduces the protective bacteria and allows the bad ones to increase, as does stress, as does refined sugar and alcohol intake. So I personally see more overgrowths than lack of beneficial bacteria if someone hasn't already done a lot of gut work. If someone's brand new and has never like touched their gut before, then they're probably having some overgrowths. Whereas if they've been on a lot of antibiotics over the years, or they've had a lot of gut protocols, they've done antimicrobial, antiparasite cleanses, then you might have started to run into low beneficial bacteria. So that's why it is important at some point to check in. Maybe not first thing, but down the line, when you're getting to the point of like, I'm not really sure what to do next, testing can be really useful. And if you do have SIBO, then some people choose to use antibiotics, and there's different ones, rifaximin, neomycin. I think that's pretty much the standard still, depending on which elevations you have, which bacteria, which gases, or antimicrobials are usually my go-to because one, I can't prescribe antibiotics, and two, I would still try to go with them first anyway, because they have so many other benefits and there's not the risk of antibiotic resistance and all of these different factors, and they're very expensive. I did antibiotics at one point for my SIBO and they were like over £200. So in the place of that, you could get a very, very good like herbal protocol instead. But it just depends on what your tolerance is, or yeah, so many different factors. But yeah, then you might want to do antimicrobials. These could be herbs like berberine and oregano and neem and golden thread. There's so many different ones. And these help to balance out the bacteria. You might want to do probiotics. And if you're really struggling with the gas and the bloating, sometimes during the treatment, a lower FODMAP diet, which FODMAP stands for I'll not go through all of them because it's a tongue twister, but fermentable oligo disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols. Okay, I just did it. But these are linked to IBS and SIBO, but we don't want to completely remove them because there is benefit to having some of these fermentable fibers still in the diet whilst you're treating. Otherwise, the bacteria can go dormant, they can go into hibernation, and it can mean that the treatment isn't as effective. So it's really just for some symptom relief, just to see if your bloating goes down. Then you might want to lower your intake of things like apples and onions and garlic. Just do a quick search on high FODMAP foods. But people react differently to different ones. So even if you react to some FODMAP foods, you might not react to all of them. So there is an option to short-term reduce them whilst working on the underlying causes with the intent of bringing them back in. Some people are just stuck on a low FODMAP diet for years and years, and that is very detrimental and obviously means that you haven't fixed the underlying problems. And then, last couple of recommendations for this person, considering digestive enzymes, broad spectrum digestive enzymes, even trying apple cider vinegar or bitters, digestive bitters before your meals. And then, if you need a little bit more, then digestive enzymes can be really useful. And things like spore-based probiotics, the ones that I use with my clients in practice, these have very balancing effects. So even if someone does have SIBO or does have overgrowth of bacteria, these ones are different than the usual probiotics on the market because they have, I kind of describe them as adaptogenic. So they go in there and regardless of what's going on, they just help to bring balance. They know what a healthy gut ecosystem looks like. So these types of bacteria reduce overgrowth, and then if you do have some deficiencies of good bacteria, they help to boost them up. So it's like a nice synergistic effects, but very different than the probiotics on the market, on the supermarket shelves. So I'm very picky when it comes to my probiotics. So I hope that was helpful for listener Jody.
Did you know that indoor air is typically more polluted and harmful than outdoor air? I wasn't really aware of the harmful effects of poor air quality until I found out that I was unknowingly being exposed to toxic mold that was making me really sick. Now I really prioritize what I think are the foundations to health: clean food, clean water, and clean air. It's not just mold that we need to be mindful of in our homes, it's the flame retardants and VOCs off-gassing from furniture, airborne parasites, pollen, dust mites, and bacteria. One of the best investments that you can make with your health is getting a high-quality air filter that is strong enough to filter these things out and clean the air properly. Otherwise, it's going to be our lungs filtering that stuff. Not all air filters are created equal, though. So I wanted to share with you my favorite brand, the Air Doctor, or if you're in the UK, the Amazing Air. I keep this powerful filter running 24/7 to give me peace of mind that the air that I'm breathing is safe and supportive to my health. Check the show notes for links to save £200 on the Amazing Air 3000 and up to $300 off the different Air Doctor models. I just know that you're going to love it as much as I do. Okay, let's get back into the show.
But let's get on to the next question. The next couple are a little bit shorter because Emma next is asking my thoughts on CBD oil. And just as an overview, I just think it's pretty expensive if you're getting the good quality stuff. I have no doubt that it is powerful and the cannabis plant can be very medicinal and healing. There's certain like cancer therapies that use CBD oil. But in my opinion, if you're using it just for like digestive issues, IBS or pain or inflammation in this level, I'm not talking about cancer or anything here, then and that's cannabis oil as well, by the way, not CBD oil, but that whole plant can be really effective. But if you're using CBD, which is the one that you can buy just in the shops over the counter, it is not going to be addressing the root causes of your symptoms. The things that it's most effective for, in my experience, are pain and inflammation. But the analogy that I like to give is if you've got a rock in your shoe and you're walking around and it's hurting you, you could take painkillers or you could take CBD oil and you're probably gonna feel less pain, but why not just take off your shoe, dump out the rock, and therefore you don't need the pain relief. The underlying causes of your pain slash inflammation, it could be that you're eating something that you're sensitive to, like gluten, or you have high levels of heavy metals in your body, or you have mold toxicity, or you have a parasite in your gut. So can you see how just taking CBD oil isn't going to address the root cause? By all means, if you're working on those things and you know what the underlying causes are, there's usually more than one, by the way, and you just want some relief, you want some symptom management, you want to bring down levels of inflammation to speed up the healing process, absolutely. I just think there's alternatives that are cheaper. And the way that CBD works is on our eicocannabinoid system, which is called the ECS for short. And this is a cell signaling system that helps to regulate many body functions, including your sleep, mood, appetite, memory, reproduction, fertility, and more. So we have this ECS in the body, even if you don't use cannabis. So despite the name, the eicocannabinoid, people will think that this only comes from smoking or ingesting cannabis, but that's not the case. And just to clarify, the part of the cannabis plant that the marijuana plant that gets you high is THC. I'm not going to say the full name because it's pretty lengthy, but this is one of the main cannabinoids found in cannabis. It is the component that gets you high, whereas the other main component found in cannabis is cannabidiol, CBD. And unlike THC, this doesn't get you high and typically doesn't have many negative effects. So it does provide benefits for some of those conditions that I mentioned earlier, fibromyalgia, IBS. And there is a theory, it's not been proven yet, that people with conditions like that have lower eicocannabinoid activity. But still, to me, that's not an answer. There's always an underlying reason for that. So it's not like just naturally we just don't produce as much as someone else. I always think there's something else going on under that. But other than CBD, there are other ways to support this system in the body. The eicocannabinoid system, such as probiotics, certain herbs, omega-3, exercise, acupuncture, dark chocolate, even orgasms. So I'd say definitely save your time or money and put it towards these things instead. This is my personal experience. I know people absolutely love CBD. I think it was very trendy for a while. Even Holland & Barrett's and different UK suppliers were jumping on the bandwagon. But yeah, I just think not addressing the root cause, pretty expensive if you're getting the good stuff. And there's just other alternatives that are really powerful. Number three is from Jessica. She's asking, do I recommend stool testing? If so, which one? If you are going to do a stool test, so it's definitely not a priority, it's not important for every single person, but if you are going to do one, I would recommend the GI Map by Diagnostic Solutions Lab. This is available through my practice. And if you really want to do a stool test, I can help you with that and I can help you understand what's going on. It's not one that you can just order yourself and be able to read it and interpret it. It requires practitioner training. But this is very different to ones offered by doctors as well. So if you've ever done a stool test at your hospital, your local GP clinic, and it comes back normal, it doesn't really mean anything because it's looking for important things like blood, inflammatory bowel markers, which can be useful. It can help to rule out certain cancers sometimes, but these people who are told if that test comes back normal, then everything's fine and get just slapped with an IBS diagnosis, they haven't been assessed for some of the other key things that this GI map looks at, such as your beneficial flora, how much good bacteria do you have? How many digestive enzymes are you making? Is that a really weak production? Do you have in like other types of inflammation or issues with your immune system being really weak in the gut? I don't run stool tests as many these days because I've just seen so many. I've done hundreds of stool tests over the years, and it is something that is pay out of pocket for the client. And a lot of people, if they've already signed up to work with me, I do a HTMA, so that's included in the one-to-one package. But other than that, they're coming to me, and It's then a toss-up between do I spend £300 on a stool test just to give me more answers and more direction, which can be useful, but then they can't afford to pay for the supplements that month because it can get pricey, it can be a lot of money with all of these different treatments and tests. So I usually just start with some investigation through questioning and going through their health history and seeing how much improvement we can get just with the foundational things, maybe some digestive enzymes, some probiotics, mindful eating, let's manage your stress, let's slow down at meal times. And then the majority of people already start to feel better. But then there comes a point where either me or the client is wanting to get some more answers. That's when I'd prefer to use a stool test rather than first thing right off the bat, unless the person wants to, that's absolutely fine. But then if the stool test comes back with imbalances, we're already going to be working on them anyway with those things that I mentioned. So that's why I don't use them as much. And I prefer to have someone spend money on things that are going to move the needle in other ways, such as some blood work to see what's going on with the thyroid or the vitamin D levels, the mineral test, which can uncover deeper root causes. And I've found that they're not 100% accurate for showing, not that any test is, but they're not great at showing yeast and candida and parasites. So with parasites, I've pretty much given up with testing. Sometimes they show up, but most of the time they don't. And there's not really a good option for that. Whereas yeast and candida, that does show up more often on an organic acid urine test, that other test that I mentioned before. So I tend to do more of those these days when looking for underlying imbalances, because that test does give insight into the gut, but also other things like your mitochondria, energy production, neurotransmitters, toxicity, inflammation. It's just more than what's going on in your large intestine. So they are available to you, to my clients. If you really want one, we can absolutely do that. But I usually leave it a little bit. So I hope that helps. And then very last question for today, another gut-focused one is from Kirby. She is asking causes and tips for stubborn digestive issues, specifically issues absorbing her fat. So she's eating, I'm assuming, nice, healthy fatty foods, fatty fish, eggs, olive oil, avocado, and she's not absorbing that. Some signs of that, obvious signs, are going to be greasy, oily stools, excessive wiping. The stools might float. After eating fat, you might get a pain under your right rib. This is where the gallbladder is, and it's trying to like squeeze out bile. I had that for a long time. After eating coconut yogurt, I would have this like stabbing pain in my stomach because I wasn't absorbing my fat well. They would be the main ones, and then some other like side symptoms, less common symptoms or less obvious symptoms. Might be that you have calcium deficiency. You might have low hormone levels. You might have low vitamin D because these hormones and nutrients are made from cholesterol, which comes from a lot of the time your dietary fats. So if you aren't absorbing cholesterol, then you can't make and convert vitamin D well. You might just have low hormones in general because hormones are the backbone. Cholesterol is the backbone to your hormones like estrogen, progesterone. You might have issues with dry skin. You might have issues with brain function because your brain and your skin like require a lot of healthy fats to function. So those are just some common signs if you're listening to this and you're like, am I dealing with this problem or not? And what should happen in a healthy gut is that we eat food. Let's say it's some fish with vegetables and sweet potato. That fish is going to have some fat, or if you've cooked it in butter or ghee, then your liver is what creates bile. The gallbladder is what stores bile. So when we eat, our gallbladder and our gut gets this signal to release bile because there's fat coming in. So we need this liquid to be released. So then it's released into the intestine where it kind of acts like soap, like dish soap or detergent, by helping to absorb your fat molecules from your food. So imagine trying to clean a greasy pan with no dish soap. That's what it's going to be like to try and absorb the healthy fat when you don't have good bile or you're not really producing bile at all. So healthy bile is like fairy liquid or dish soap. If you're in a different country and you don't know what fairy liquid is in the UK, then you're not going to clean that pan. So a nice healthy gut is going to clean the pan well. We absorb that fat molecule. We then turn that into hormones and nutrients and different things. So the main causes that I see when someone's having issues in this whole area and this collection of organs and parts of the body, I refer to it as the biliary system. So it's your liver, gallbladder, bile. So if I refer to it from that to that from now on, you know what I'm talking about. So gut infections are a huge one. This can be parasites. So parasites can live within the intestines, but also within the liver gallbladder duct. So that can block the bile from being released. And long term, that can lead to gallstones. And if the gallstones are too large or they become it becomes inflamed and infected, some people can have the gallbladder removed. So we absolutely want to avoid that at all costs, because that's not just a like easy condition or easy surgery to have. It can cause long-lasting issues. Another, it's not necessarily an infection, but an imbalance in the gut is SIBO. That can lead to malabsorption. Parasites can do that as well. So when we have these imbalances in the gut, it can interfere with the absorption of nutrients. For some people, it's B12. For some people, it's again your calcium level. And for other people, it's the fat. So if you've got SIBO or parasites, it can mean that instead of being absorbed, the fat is just going straight through into the stool. And with that stool test I just mentioned, the GI map, there is a marker on there called steatocrit. So you can see if that's elevated, that there is fat in the stool, which there really shouldn't be that much of. So we want that to be a zero on the test. Next is low stomach acid. This can be for a number of reasons. I'm kind of giving a cause and then deeper causes within that. So you might have low stomach acid from chronic stress, H. pylori infection. This is a bacteria that can live in the stomach and it shuts down your stomach acid production. And things like zinc, sodium, B6 deficiency can lead to low stomach acid. Mindless eating. So if you're eating when you're stressed or you're rushing out the door, eating a sandwich, that can lead to low stomach acid. You're more at risk if you've been on vegetarian or vegan diets long term, because if you don't use it, you lose it. You need stomach acid to digest animal protein. But if you're not eating that, then your body's like, great, I don't need to waste a lot of energy on producing stomach acid. But then that does cause issues in the future. And a lot of these tie together. So when you have low stomach acid, you're more at risk of developing SIBO, you're more likely to pick up parasites, and your body's going to be more stressed because it's not functioning optimally. So they're all tying in together, as you can see. So when we eat, we should have this strong acidic stomach pH, similar to battery acid, and then that triggers the gallbladder to release bile. So a lot of people focus just on the liver gallbladder, but I like to go a step before and see what's going on in the stomach too, because if the gallbladder isn't getting that signal to release bile from the stomach, then that can be the problem. Next is liver, gallbladder, and bile dysfunction. There could be stones in there, parasites, as I said. The type of fat that you're eating can influence the way that your bile is made up. So if you're eating a lot of trans fats, then or more inflammatory fats, omega-6 rich fats, that can influence the quality of your bile. You might have nutrient deficiencies. So, you need tons of nutrients for your liver to work optimally. You need certain nutrients like cholesterol, as I said, to make up your bile. You need nutrients like choline and what else? Glycine, taurine, certain amino acids for all of that area to be functioning properly. And you might have estrogen dominance. So if you've got excessive estrogen levels or just an imbalance with your progesterone, this can slow down the bile flow, can make it more sluggish and sticky, so it's not flowing. Stress, again, blood is moving away from your gut, so you aren't going to be digesting well. And just, I want to be really, I just want to make you aware of these self-fulfilling prophecies that we can develop. So if you're constantly telling yourself, my gut's broken, I can't digest my food, I can't digest fat, I'm not sure what this person, maybe in the way that she worded the question, I'm not sure, but this came to mind. Like, be really mindful what you're telling yourself. But yeah, again, Side tangent, I'm always going to mention the subconscious and the emotional aspect with all of these. So it might be the stress in the way that you're eating or the subconscious hidden stressors, history of trauma, that could still be affecting you now, even if you consciously think that it's not. So maybe investigate that. Again, I'm giving lots of different, I know it may just be that this person needs to improve her stomach acid and that's it. But I'm giving many examples just for things for you to look into. Speaking of emotional health, there's always, with whatever symptom you're dealing with, I believe, always a physical and energetic emotional aspect. So with liver, gallbladder, biliary symptoms, anger, frustration, resentment, irritability, and bitterness are going to be the top emotions involved. And bitterness is funny because some of the things that can help with this is increasing your bitters in your diet. So very ironic. Thyroid issues can contribute to biliary issues because especially underactive mainly is what I'm going to be talking about. This just causes a low energy state and it takes a lot of energy and a lot of nutrients and minerals to make healthy stomach acid and also healthy bile. Mineral imbalances also tie into this because if you have, for example, something called a calcium shell, this slows down your metabolic rate, your metabolism. It can slow down your thyroid. And same thing that I just said, it just lowers your energy overall. You might also have low electrolytes, which can affect hydration and energy and movement within the body. So if you've got low sodium and low potassium, your body is kind of dehydrated constantly. And a big component of bile is water. So you might just be dehydrated, but if you're drinking a lot of water, but you're still electrolyte deficient, that can still mean that you are dehydrated, even if you're drinking a gallon of water a day, which I wouldn't recommend. Heavy metals can also deplete minerals and can affect enzyme production directly. You need zinc and sodium for that stomach acid production. So a few different examples here. I would really recommend considering my HTMA course. It's called I'm Balanced, and it's available right now. So you can test your body in this case and see exactly what's going on with these specific minerals. And the course will tell you a little bit more about what to do if you have certain imbalances. And toxicity, so there is that heavy metal component, which does get investigated through the HTMA test. But also look into mold. If there's any symptom that is just not improving and you really feel like you're doing all the right things, always consider mold toxicity. It's always front of my brain because it's something that I dealt with and it was a huge cause of chronic health issues for me, but it's not the first thing that I would jump to. But mold can directly cause stagnation in the bile flow, the biliary system. It can overload your liver. And yeah, if you have any signs of gallbladder, fat absorption issues, just your liver always seems to need support for some reason, consider looking into mold. And I have a mold course if you're wanting to get access to testing your body, your home, and you're wanting to work on that if that is the case. Then my mold recovery course is for you. Both of these will be linked in the episode show notes. And then just for some tips, general tips to consider looking into some broad spectrum digestive enzyme. This is a bit of a band-aid solution, not going to lie, just to have you feel better and start absorbing your food. But then with things like a zinc deficiency or a cholesterol absorption issue, it becomes a vicious cycle because you need zinc to make healthy stomach acid, but you can't absorb zinc if you have low stomach acid. So a lot of the times you need to intervene, and I love digestive enzymes for that. You're not going to need them long term, but they can really be supportive. And for some point in my health journey, I was on them for well over a year, and they really made a huge difference. So there are ones that specifically help to digest fat. So this is what this person should be looking at within the ingredients list. Enzymes like lipase, or there are ox bile enzymes that can be really useful. So this is actual bile from an ox, and you take that and it supports your own bowel flow. But still be looking for the underlying causes of why you're dealing with this in the first place. If you're dealing with the estrogen dominance, then maybe looking into like estrogen clearing things and making sure that you're not constipated, mindful eating, chewing your food, consider a gut protocol if that comes up as necessary, parasite cleansing, addressing SIBO, addressing H. pylori to make sure your stomach acid can come back online. You might try bitters before a meal. This can trigger the gallbladder. And some of my favorites are a strong dandelion tea. You can chew on some arugula or rocket before your meal. A bitters tincture. They have herbs in like gentian root. You might not need to do both that and a digestive enzyme, but some people do. They need all the support that they can get. Consider some of the nutrients for healthy bile flow, like choline, taurine, glycine, even cholesterol. Make sure that they're coming from the diet first. You could just Google what these nutrients are found in. But sometimes we do need an extra supplement if we're not absorbing all of the nutrition from our food. You can test your gut, especially if you've been dealing with symptoms for a while, through a stool test or organic acid urine test. And I would, for additional tests, maybe look into your thyroid with a full thyroid panel. Make sure that includes your free T3 levels, and consider HTMA through my mineral balancing course, I'm Balanced, to see what's going on with heavy metals and mineral deficiencies. So that is all I've got time for today. My voice is starting to go. I don't know if you can hear. I've had a few little breaks within this recording, but please let me know if you enjoyed this type of episode, and I will definitely do more. I love doing them. And this will give you a chance to get your questions answered. So I hope you have a great day, whatever you're up to, and I'll see you back here next week.
I really hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, I would love for you to leave me a rating and review on your podcast app, as this helps to support the show and it allows it to reach more people with this valuable information. Come and say hi over on Instagram. I'm at Viva Natural Health. And if you haven't already, check out my website, vivanaturalhealth.co.uk, for tons more free resources and to discover how I could support you further. I currently offer one-on-one consultation packages if you want my top-level support, then more affordable group programs and self-paced online courses. So there really is something for everyone. Enjoy the rest of your day, and I'll see you back here next week for another episode.